Accession number 29423, Reel 3.
And this is Wing Commander John Freeborn, Reel 3. So, yes, we're just talking about the morale on the camp during this time.
Yes, it was very, very sad. You've got a young man arrived, well educated, from good families, gave us sergeant pilots. Were quickly commissioned, but when it came to doing the job of work that they had to do, it was beyond them, and they got shut down by these very capable German fighter pilots. And it was sad, because you knew damn well when you saw them they were not made of the right stuff. Their best hard as nails, and these blokes weren't. They were nice young men, nice educated young men from good families. I don't want to think of them, of my youth. There were six of us. I was to fight for everything, and my brother just took hell out of me. So my younger brother, he got it from me. I'm a sister.
So you would know when somebody arrived at the camp, you'd know if they were a survivor or not.
Yes. Yeah. You see, when Peter Chesters, he was a sergeant in the Volunteer Reserve, but he hadn't done any training, and he used to walk about in RAF uniform, sergeant stripes, and south end of that town at Rochford, and we used to go to the Palace Hotel, and he was always there, and I'll be joining you fellas, don't you worry. I'm going to be with 74 Squadron. And we say, bell him off, we don't let me use sergeant pilots. And no way, you couldn't. We never got rid of him. And then he'll say, come on home and have a drink. And of course, we went to this mansion where they lived. Oh God, they were a wealthy family. Dad sat in a chair and he pressed a button like that. And all the wall road. And there was a bar at the back of it. Oh God. Our father was worse than the slum. He turned up at my home one night and he said, you don't know me. He said, but you're Harold Freeborn. So I said, yes, I am. Well, he says, I'm Bill Chesters. He said, your son and my son are great friends, and your son comes to my house. So I said, boy, come in. Yeah, he said, I must bring this out. And it was a 30-pound ham. And they said, you enjoy this, they said, but keep it out of sight. Because the Minister of Food investigators were chasing him. And he picked it up in York. And he thought, well, how am I going to get rid of it? I'm not going to throw it away. And then he said, the three boys live in Leeds, I'll find them. And he did. And he drank a bottle of whiskey at once. He was quite a character as a father, though. But they were nice people to know. And I got a letter the other day with a bloke called Brian Kirk, a sergeant pilot. And he was a nice young lad. And when, of course, when we found out this, he got shot down. And was badly wounded. He landed in the grounds of the hospital at Maidstone. And he'd had a bullet through the base of his spine. And it turned him into a paraplegic. But it was a dirty, dirty bullet. And if you stuck a lockjaw. And I was in a terrible state. And they whipped him from there to Leeds. Because Leeds is a great medical centre. And he was in the Ministry of Defence Hospital at Chapel Allerton in Leeds. And I went to see him. I was home on leave, and I went in to see him just before he died. And his mother was there, and sister. And the sister wrote to me not very long ago, and I've lost the Fleming letter, and it's a lovely letter. And she says, "Fancy you turning up to see him with a bottle of Bemis for him." That's what I had after those days. But my brother knew the whole family very well. My brother was a farmer, and the Kirk family were farmers. And of course, young Brian Kirk was too young to go in the forces anyway. He was 16 when he went to the Air Force. And how he'd conned them. Of course, he got to produce a birth certificate. Anyway, he was just coming up to 17 when he came to us. And doing very well too. And then he got this bullet that went in the base of his spine. And he died a frightful death. He literally shriveled up backwards. And these things obsess you. And I can recall these so well. I have a fantastic memory. At least times. Well, so memory's not very good now. They still ask me the questions. A man from Canada has written to Bob Cozzi to ask if the Spitfire 1 and 2, Mark 1 and 2, had clocks fitted. So everybody said, no, never any clocks. And I told him, there was a clock on the top right outside of the instrument panel. And he wound it up by turning the bezel on the clock. No, never. And General Vickers didn't know. And they made the damn things. So, I had a book on how to fly a Spitfire. A ministry book, a ministry book. And I got pictures of it again. And the pictures of the cockpit. And there's the clock. I knew it was there. And everybody, no! And Victor said, no, they don't put clocks in. No, there are no clocks in that place at all. They'd have had them if they'd been fitted. And of course, they were fitted. And that was from Canada. Well, I still feel one ill now. And I do remember such a lot.
So are there any things that you've read in any of these books that you think should be corrected?
In the books? Mm. Oh, yes. Those are things. You see, they said I was sent to 602 Squadron as a flight commander. Well, I wasn't sent to 602 Squadron as a flight commander at all. I was a squadron leader and a supernumerary. And I went to 602 Squadron because they didn't know what to do with me. I blotted my copy book at I was commanding Bald Head, which was a satellite of Exeter at the time, and I was doing illegal fishing and all the things he shouldn't be doing. So they had to get rid of me. And they sent me to 602 Squadron at Penborough, which I didn't like at all. But they also, I was sent to 602 Squadron at Skibray, that's in Scotland, in the Orkneys. Well, you couldn't get to a place any further apart. It was Skibray and Penborough, and over 1,000 miles difference. Anyway, that's where it's going. It annoys me. It annoys me when they spell my name wrong, too. B-O-U-R-N-E. B-O-R-N-E. Why put an E on the end of a name? An E normally, in a word, changes an I or an A. And there's no I or A in Freeborn. I just had a row with Broadband people, and they would insist on having an E on my name. So I said, right, well, you can keep your bloody broadband, I'm not paying you, and I wouldn't pay. So they were going to go to the court, they were going to do this. And I said, get on with it. I said, because I want you to pretend if I get a letter from the court with an E on the end of my name. So they dropped it. They gave in. I won. But it's one of the oldest names in Britain. I don't think you've ever met one, have you? Well, all Freeborns are spelt my way. Our relatives. And we came over with the Norman Conquest as farmers. So we are a family site in York and in the Shambles in York there's a shop and the name above it is it's a white pine furniture shop that flat packs and things and over the door is E.J. Freeborn and we're standing outside. And he goes, my daughter is E.J. Freeborn, Elizabeth Julia. And the shop owner must have heard this. And he came out and he said, you're not Freeborn. So I said, bloody well are. And he said, well, that's the best. He said, I'll send you a family tree. Well, I never got it. I never sent it. But as he said, we are all related.
So that should be corrected for any researchers that are actually using this tape in the future. Please spell the name correctly. It's very important.
Yeah, it is to me.
Anything else that you'd feel should be corrected, though? Is there any other mistakes you've come across?
I don't think so, not really. Things get wrong, or written wrongly. Due to people not knowing and hearsay, and that is the biggest trouble, is people put it on paper And what they're writing is hearsay, not fact. And there must be mountains of it done. Other than that, I don't think I can pinpoint anything else.
Well, I know there are technical questions that I'm supposed to ask you.
Yes.
Things like the characteristics of the aircraft that you were flying. Things like how fast were you going, how manoeuvrable were the early planes to the later planes? And
well, I took a Spitfire 2 down to Eastleigh, and they took the wingtips off. So I had the first clipped-wing Spitfire, and they wrapped the wingtips up and passed them in the back of the seat. I gave me a bill. I said, I'm not paying it. I said, I don't know what £100 looks like. So they said, no, give it to your squadron commander. And I got back and I gave it to the flight sergeant, she was in the flight. I said, I could have done this job for 10 bob. 2 pieces of wood. That's all it was. Anyway, we got the clip-wing Spitfire, and I never rated it as much. And the Spitfire I had always enjoyed was the Spitfire 2, and it started getting refinements, like automatic undercarriage. You've slipped it, and none of this damn pumping. You just turn the handle over. Things were much improved on the Spitfire 2. But now they weren't satisfied. We got Spitfire 5s. They had to put a bigger engine in. And it was the most awful bloody Spitfire I ever flew. I loathed and detested it. And wherever I went, it was always Spitfire 5s. I was sent with World War VIII Squadron down to Tangmere, and we were being re-equipped with 9Bs, which were not the high-flying 9s. The 9As were the high-flying ones, the type that Johnny Johnson had great success with. Cannons and everything. But so here we are, taking the radios out of our 5s and putting them into these new 9Bs as they arrived. And we were sharing the airdrome with the Poles and the Czechs. And the Poles screamed blue murder when they saw the 9s. And they wanted them, they were entitled to them. And this, all the bloody rubbish that you get from Poles and Czechs, how they won the Battle of Britain, they won nothing. They might have won all the girls, but they certainly weren't very good. Not my book. So there was a row that went on, and I lost my 9s. I'd have to take their 5s. So I just said, well, I'm not taking my squadron to war in bloody Spitfire 5s. I said, I don't like it. It's a bloody awful airplane. It doesn't do what it should do. And I spoke to the air officer admin at the 11 group. And the next thing is, get your bloody squadron up to Peterhead. So I thought, right, I've now been kicked out of Tangmere with Polish 5s. We'll go to Peterhead. I will be as big a bloody nuisance as we can be. So they rang up the Church Fenton and said, there will be a squadron of Spitfires coming into the night. and they went by the church vendor, because they had to accommodate us. And all day, I've never seen such a sad-faced lot of people as church friends. And anyway, we upset the whole job as they put it up. And then I said, flight control, we're going to Peterhead, but we're going to land at Turnhouse, Edinburgh, a radio. Well, it's only a couple of girls of myself. Just went into Edinburgh. So, we went in. And we were greeted dryly. There was no place to see us. And gave us lunch. And we were very, very happy down there. I thought, what a difference to church renting. And so they said, where are you going now? I said, we're going to be dead. All the best of luck. And watch out for the prison. And dodge the wind if you can, because it doesn't go around you. It goes straight through you. And it's cold. And up to Peterhead we arrived. The station commander was a Canadian. The Canadian Wing Commander. Christ, where have you bloody old been? Been waiting 2 days for you. So I said, we're to come up gently. These Spitfire fires are not very good condition. And he said, don't give me that bloody rubbish. So he said, anyway, that's it. It's all yours now. I'm off. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going back to Canada. So I was left there, a station commander, squadron commander, flight commander, everything. Oh, cold, oh. It was terrible. And then, the next thing is, we get Spitfire sixes. And they've got extended wings for very high flying. So I thought, I'm going from bad to worse. I thought, bloody fives. Now I've got these sixes. Anyway, they said, you're not staying here. You go down to Castletown. Oh, I thought, and the flight's going to Skibbereen. On the Orkneys. The air jammer Skibbereen, the Orkneys, was just a piece of tarmac with a white line painted at one end, a white line painted at the other. It was aircraft carrier deck. Oh, God, bloody places. So we got to. In the meantime, I had to go to the nest and be briefed. Yeah. Our intelligence service must have been extremely clever and very well informed, because they knew there was a Ju-88 coming over and it was going to pass very close to Peterhead, and it was going to drop a German spy, as we did with Lysanders. There'll be a bullfighter and a mosquito, and you've got to control them and get them into a position where they can shoot this 88 down, but it mustn't go down in flames. It mustn't go down all dead. It's got to be shot down that it lands, and we can capture that. They throw the bobbies with there. Oh, God, I thought, wow, I got to do this. Don't even know what I'm doing. Anyway, we managed it, and it was shot down by the bullfighter. And at the bullfighter, And he was a massive armament on the bullfighter. And four cannons in the nose. And 420mm cannons. You know, they need one bit of airplane. Anyway, they down it went and they captured them. And I did find out that the shot that broke, and took it, he was taken down the tower and shot. Oh, it's a terrible thing, you know. And there we were stuck up beat ahead. And then, right, off you go up to Castletown. And we lived in Alderson 5 property. And the air drill now is quite good. Except I had to take a flight over to Skibbereen for the Navy to look after. And that's the last thing I should have done. In the Air Force, when you land, you are immediately refueled and rearmed if necessary. Well, the Navy don't do that. When the aircraft land, they go down and they lift into the hangar, but they don't refuel them till they bring them back up again. They're going to use them, but we don't. And of course, at Skipper, I lost two Spitfires because they were sent off and they hadn't been refueled. And into the Atlantic they went. And so we got to Skipper, we got to Castletown. Well, we were re-equipped with Spitfire 8s with extended wingtips. A very powerful engine, a three-stage supercharger on it, a pressure cabin. And it would go to about computed height, about 43,000 feet. And these were to catch one of the J-88s. And the Americans, because the Americans are flying over from America, one way you catch them halfway across the North Sea, and then rapidly for Norway or Denmark or somewhere. But after America, so oh dear, so we bring them back. But I had a great time at Castletown. We were very friendly with the Sinclair family. Sir Archibald Sinclair was Secretary of State for Air, and he was very good to us. And he listened to what we told him. I told him about these bloody awful airplanes. And then, of course, we got these aids. Sergeant Miles and he said, "These aircraft are dangerous." I said, "What do you mean, dangerous?" "Oh, it's a fright of my life." He said, "I nearly bailed out." I said, "Oh, what happened?" "Well," I said, "I was coming down from about 30,000 feet. And I throttled right back. And I was down very steep. Going down very steeply. And I was doing turns. And then it started to shudder. And I couldn't stop it. So I said, "Well, how fast are you going?" He said, "I was doing about 400 miles an hour." So I said, "Well, it shouldn't." I said, "I'll test it to 450. It shouldn't. So, that's in a doubt, of course. So, we got on to the group engineer office and told him, and they sent a test pilot from Boscombe Down came up. He was a sailor, a lieutenant commander. I just can't remember his name. Anyway, he went up in one, did the same thing. "Oh, Christ," he said, "they are bloody dangerous." I said, "Get the pellets off the wings let's have a look at the main spa and the mountings and everything. And these aircraft had been made by Singer sewing machines. I think they must have thought they were building a sewing machine. And they got to fill it off, and he says, just look at that main spar bolt. I said, it's supposed to be high tensile steel bolt about that thickness. And it was mild steel. And it said bent. So the wings hadn't come off. Now you'll have to excuse me a moment. My diabetes. Hello, Fiona. I'm John Freeborn.